I'm starting the show now, even though we're not ready to start the show, because I like the conversation already, and I want you to be a part of it. The last time I got to talk to my beloved Meredith, my wife, on the show, it was a little long, 3 hours. We shouldn't go that long today, because she's not interviewing me, and I don't have control of it in that way to just talk and talk and talk and talk. I'm interviewing her, and we're going to get to what we're going to talk about in a moment, but we were just talking about headphones while recording and how she doesn't want to hear herself in the recording. And then you were going to ask a question. It's distracting.
I think it's distracting to hear my own voice because I'm not used to hearing my own voice. And so when I hear it in my ear, it's like, oh, that's what I sound like. Oh, I better speak lower. Or, oh, I didn't like the way I inflected that word. I'm going to not do that next time. And so it just becomes something else that I'm thinking about rather than actually being present and thinking about what I'm saying to you. So I was going to ask you why when you're speaking to nobody and you have a video recording going, you're recording yourself, why would you have headphones on?
Precisely for the reason you don't like, that the ability to hear the narrow inflection allows you to better inflect. You really know what you sound like. And especially if you're going to monitor your levels and make sure that, oh, I don't know, your mic didn't turn off or something like that, you're always aware of what you sound like and what's going out. It's a habit I developed with live radio in a studio when you're talking to someone who is not in the studio and you can only hear them with the headphones on.
Oh, right.
And you need to hear the music and all this kind of stuff. Well, but as a habit then, I just got used to hearing it. And then it became, I think, preferable for knowing what the conversation sounds like. I am hearing what everyone listening to us will hear.
Right.
And you're not, right? And so that's why I like it. But it is interesting that I don't know if it's 50% of guests or a good chunk of guests don't like it, don't want it.
Don't want to have headphones on? Yeah, well, I don't sit in a room normally with you with headphones on speaking to you. And so, and honestly, visually, to have headphones on, when I'm speaking to somebody who has headphones on, I feel like my immediate response is they're ignoring me. They're listening to something else.
What was that? I wasn't paying attention.
Your music was too loud. Yeah. Turn the music down.
I want, how much of it is that you don't like your own voice?
Well, that was what started this. So yeah, no, I don't. I don't hear what other people hear. And so it's a distraction to me.
Everyone doesn't like their own voice.
Exactly.
Why do you think that is?
Well, because you don't hear it. You're not used to it. So I hear what's more behind my voice and you hear what's in front. And so it's startling.
But it's more real. Why would we think that that's more beautiful? I think it's connected to our selfishness somehow.
Our insecurities.
Yeah, definitely. That too. And I mean, I remember not liking my voice. And I still don't think I have like what you would call a good radio voice or anything like that. But now, again, this is like a plus. Like I really don't hate my voice. It's fine. It's my voice.
It's your voice. Yeah. You're used to it.
Yeah, it's great. I mean, it's what it is. A little nasally. Yeah, but otherwise, so.
No, you have good smolder.
Smolder.
Yeah, you did it the other day, and it was like, I leaned over, it was in church, and I leaned over to Chloe, and I said, he just smoldered.
In the pulpit?
In Bible study.
Oh, in Bible study. Oh, man. Now, if you don't get that reference, I recommend highly, highly watching the Jumanji new movie with The Rock and, what's his name? Cake. Little guy. Kevin Hart. There you go.
Kevin Hart.
Jack Black is okay in it. He's actually, I call him a weak link. But the movie's hilarious. There are a few moments that are what you might call junior high level potty humor. but so be careful. We watched it with our kids and we all thought it was funny. There were a few where the kid, like the youngest kids are like, what was that about? And they didn't get it.
And
they didn't need to, right? We didn't even explain it. Right? Yo, don't worry about it. But it, man, but the Smolder, Dr. Smolder Bravestone. Yeah, that's nice that I've been compared to The Rock Johnson at this point. I feel good. That's why I have you on my podcast, Meredith, is because you, whatever they're thinking, you make me feel special. So Hopefully you will enjoy this today. Meredith and I are going to talk about something that I have already talked about a lot in public places. And if you go to, I think you can find it at revfisk.com. I'm pretty sure it's definitely at the revfisk.podbean.com. It is on the podcast feed. If you scroll back far enough, I think I released it all as a chunk officially like in October of last year, 2018. So somewhere back in there, you can find all of the conversations I had with Todd Wilkin on Issues Etc. regarding parenting and what they called as a series, Parenting in the Age of Progressivism. So if you want to know what I think about parenting, you'll get a little bit of it today. But you know, that's there for you. Maybe I have more to offer, maybe I don't. But after doing that, and with all of that out there for public consumption, the thing in my head a little bit is, like, so you talk the talk, how do you walk that walk? And I'm sure some of you have had that thought or question. I even got asked it once at a speaking engagement where, after just talking about youth in general, the individual kind of went right at my kids and said, well, how are you doing this specifically with your kids? And I had to basically say, my wife. I'm a failure. I try, you know, we tag team, that kind of thing. So there's that thing that you may have that as a question, but then I also have the question for my own wife, having, I think, listened to much of that. Did I represent us? And how much is this a we? How much does we and pulling together have to do with this? Does that make sense? Like, or how much of it is I'm just setting an agenda, but you have a different idea? Because that is a huge part of actually parenting. I mean, it's almost like a first point, is that in theory, we're supposed to be pulling in the same direction.
Right.
So what do you think about that?
I think you listening to the radio interviews that you did with Todd Wilkin, it was refreshing to me because you kind of get into a rut. Sometimes you start out, you have your brand new baby, and you guys look at that baby and you have all these grandiose ideas of what you're going to do. And then life happens and you get into this kind of routine rut of just going day by day, the same thing, the diapers, the feeding, the maybe discipline here and there, but at first it's not a lot. And so you forget sometimes what your goals were starting out. I think it's been in the back of our minds. It's been there for us as we've gone through this journey over the past 14 years, but it was refreshing to have it put right back in front of my face to hear it again. The little things that we don't talk about daily or weekly or monthly, when we're just going about the normal mundane routine of driving kids to volleyball or confirmation class or disciplining their behavior amongst each other or with us. So yes, you did represent us very well, but it was a fabulous reminder of what we as a team are working towards.
I think that idea of, I'm just writing down the note as I try to say it out loud, pit stops and restarts is an interesting place to start just with parenting in general. The idea that you don't just do it, you try. And then you try again. And I think people who are most frustrated with parenting just try and try again and don't ever reflect on what happened and why, or align themselves with resources of others who have reflected on exactly that thing in either scientific study, biblically speaking, history, all those places. To arm yourself with, again, reflection on it so that you can begin again. And that in one sense, this is an everyday thing in a home. It's an everyday thing in Christianity. And then it's an everyday thing in the home, or should be. And then it's even bigger than that when it comes to like milestones and years. So I'm just thinking a little bit about last night, right? We are lightly rebooting some of the agenda for homeschool.
Right.
But that's just, you know, we don't have to chase that. That's just another example of pit stops and restarts.
Well, to comment on that, something that I have noticed over the years, just talking with other parents or new parents who have come to me for advice, reminding them, your child's not a robot. You don't program them and then just push a button and have them go and work off of the code, the initial code that you punched in. They are humans who are sinful, and they're going to respond to the sinful world that is around them in ways that you will have never expected. And so it is a constant reassessing of, you know, if I've set this boundary, now I have to see how the child's going to respond to that boundary. That doesn't mean remove the boundary, but it does mean, now what other boundaries and guidelines do I need to set up so that that child cannot fail, but be helped to mm-hmm. succeed?
And whether the boundary harms them or whether it is them finding a way to use the boundary against you in some way.
Right. It's also been something that I have noticed as I've gotten a little older with my kids. Maybe don't be so hasty to set the boundary initially. You know, if you are at the grocery store and you say, if you do that one more time, we're going to leave. Oh, hold on there, mother. You just shot yourself in the foot, because I can guarantee that that sinful little child is going to do it again just to test you. And then you have to be able to stop your grocery shopping right there and go home. Cart full, you have to be done.
Why? If you have to do your grocery shopping, why can't you just say, well, one more time? Why not? What does it do?
If you don't follow through with your word, you are showing the child that you're a liar and that my word doesn't mean anything. And so, therefore, you can ignore me and or not trust. You're establishing a relationship of not trusting. So I learned this early on. I had a two-year-old, and I think I was expecting our second. And I said, you will not scream at me. You will sit calmly in the cart, and we will walk into the grocery store, and you will stop screaming. You know, you go to the store at various times of day, and sometimes it's the bad time. Well, so I threatened, okay, if you do this one more time, we're leaving. Lo and behold, my two-year-old did it again. And I had to turn around and go home, and we had no food. And then I had to go back to the store later that night and do my grocery shopping when I could have been done with it and, you know, relaxed in the evening with my husband. And
I have two thoughts that come out of that, but I want to ask you another question first.
Yeah.
What should you have done instead?
What
would be a wiser thing to do instead than the ultimatum you gave?
I think now, if my child does something like that, my response is more to explain what you're doing is not acceptable. I do not like it. It is hurting me. I do not to do a punishment of like,
or else
we're going to it. A, because depending on the age of the child, they don't understand the or else. And so they'll push the boundary to see, oh, what does or else mean?
That's awesome. Yeah.
And if they're older, they're an or else, it just doesn't, it needs to be immediate. So what you're doing to your mother right now is hurting her heart and making her very sad. That goes a lot further than, well, you don't get candy, right, or you don't get this or that. I'm taking away your screen time. It, for them to know that they've hurt you is one of the surest way for them to understand this is wrong. What I've done is wrong, because all children want to do is please their parents ultimately.
Even a two-year-old.
Oh, yeah. The smile, the approval, it goes a long, long way.
So that kind of answers one of those two questions I mentioned, because I was thinking about, you said you told a two-year-old to stop. And I think the normal American parent, 99.8% of all parents, think you can't tell any child ever to stop and expect them to do so. And I'm not sure I agree with that. But then, you know, you kind of demonstrated that the approach you took, you will stop or else, didn't work.
Mm-hmm.
So do you still think that if you had a two-year-old, there are times to say, you will stop this right now?
Oh, yeah. I recently spent some time with a two-year-old.
Oh, that's right. You did.
And I loved that two-year-old. And I think she is just amazing. But oh my, when the little hand went up in front of the spoon as it was coming towards her mouth, and she said, no, 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 instead of all done, thank you, it made me so frustrated. And I don't know why. You know, each of us have our little pet peeves and our little things that strike us and make us go crazy. But that little hand telling me, no, 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 instead of no, thank you, I'm all done, just sent me over the edge. And I said, you need to stop saying that. You say all done, thank you. And it, but no, that's like, that's a very minor thing. But there are other times when this little one was running away from the group into danger, and you can't say, oh, that's a bad idea, honey. It's no, stop now, before the car hits you, before that dangerous dog runs at
right,
you.
Right.
You know, you need to be here now with me. Stop. And they need to be able to respond to that.
Right. So you got the emergency scenario, mm-hmm. which you don't want to overuse.
No, absolutely.
Because then they won't listen when you're saying it, right? Because you're always yelling at them. And that's, I mean, that's hard because your frustrations are working against that. But again, so even the example you said was a poor example of the spoon, like you carry with you the belief that a two-year-old can change her behavior based on your parenting of her without necessarily resulting to either or punishments immediately, simply by having a rather adult conversation with the child. I think that's like world shattering to people.
Well, if we never give the children the words, they won't have the words. So if you expect them as five-year-olds to be able to say, I'm all done, thank you, then they need to have been exposed to it several times prior to that five-year-old marker. And it starts right away. It starts with you speaking to your spouse as the infant is around you in a respectful manner. And then once the infant starts crawling or scooting, you know, you responding to them the way you want them to respond to you. And then giving them, as soon as their words are forming, giving them the vocabulary. If I don't have a vocabulary that is grandiose and full of lots of words, then I don't even know to use them.
It makes me think about something that I never did talk about in those other interviews, but it has been something we did decide very early and we kind of stuck with it. I'm a little curious about, it sounds like you still would agree, and I think I do too, but we intentionally never had or used baby talk with our kids. When they were one or a baby, we didn't speak to them in the kind of coochie cooey, goopy booey. I don't even know what to say.
Horsey was never a word.
Or yeah, we didn't use silly words, funny words, but there's
even
a way of
mommy and
pitching
daddy.
Your voice. Well, and we could talk about, I'll write that down to talk about those words there. But just in general.
Oh, right.
The from infancy.
Pitch. Oh, you baby, sweet,
yeah,
sweet. Yeah.
From infancy, just saying, I'm going to talk to you like you're an adult.
Right.
And someone's going to say, well, they can't understand you. Yeah, they can't understand anything you're doing, right? But the only way they will ever know or learn to understand is by you doing it. And you are effectively wasting time in giving them language and culture skills, when you don't make use of that sponge-like time of infancy and the repetition, like you said, it's got to be repeated a lot.
I thought it was very challenging when I had my first to come up with different things to say to her because sure. I was out of practice. So right away, what I started doing was reading to her books that were maybe children's books that I had never read. So you gave us Little House on the Prairie, the whole series. And I read that through her first year of life because to her out loud, because it filled the void, the blank space in the day. Home alone with my baby all day long, you run out of things to say. But I wanted her to be exposed to my voice constantly and to the richness of vocabulary.
I think it's kind of important to point out this was before the days of podcasting.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. So,
but even then, I mean, I don't know. I don't.
Well, we didn't want to turn the TV on. That's another issue altogether. So we didn't want just noise constantly in the background, radio mm-hmm. just humming around, because we wanted to avoid messages that we didn't want sent, especially at a young age. We wanted to avoid being having a culture as a family which can't converse but has to have someone else talking to you at all. So we did all that intentionally. But I do think that today you might listen to a specific or a targeted podcast with an infant there and just consider that to be valuable for the infant, mm-hmm. which most people wouldn't think that, right? They think the infant's not getting anything, but the infant is.
Yeah.
And that's what you were trying to do. And then part of what that they're getting human communication and audible vocal inflections and what is appropriate and what is not. And all of this comes back to you and the child with the spoon and having to say, I'm frustrated with you.
Right.
And here is why. And if you say this, I won't be.
Right. Yeah? And that leads me to another thought of what early on I had heard, that you give the child words for their emotions. So instead of just allowing them to scream, you say, are you sad? You are sad now, or you are mad. I understand you are mad. But this is not how we act when we are mad. I understand that hurt. But when you're hurt, come to me and I will give you a hug and help you feel better. Those, you know, helping them recognize this is my emotion and this is what I want to help me with that emotion so that then they can express it later when you would expect more of them than a tantrum on the floor. It's very helpful and it helps them to move forward in society. I guess, I mean, isn't that the goal, is to move our children up in society?
Well, I don't know. There's another issue just in general. I don't know if people enter parenthood today with a goal. I think it's just something that they do or happens. It's like going to college almost. It's just like it's whatever. Yeah, it's an accessory. It's just what everyone does. Got to buy a house, got to go to college, buy a house, probably have two kids. But the career is the important thing. I might make goals there. I might not. I might just follow my dreams and not think about it. But the kids are just kind of there for the ride. They're supposed to bring us happiness in some way, which is ridiculous, actually. I mean, the kids are marvelous, but at the same time, as a source of happiness, they will fail you tremendously.
And oftentimes, speaking with mothers, I find their response is, well, I tried being home, but it was too overwhelming, and so I went back to work. And so that, speaking to your comment on happiness, that fulfillment, it's not something that's just going to suddenly, this sinful little creature comes into my life and my life becomes perfect. Hmm. No, they're sinful. And so they're going to bring sin into your life. And it's oftentimes in the form of a mirror held up in front of your face, how bad you are, yeah. Not necessarily how yeah. bad they are.
Yeah. Yeah. You have the most difficult job in the entire world, which receives almost no praise other than on Mother's Day. And it never praises you for actually raising the children. It's just, you're supposed to get food. It's the most difficult job in the world. And because it is therefore in the world, it's going to have all sorts of, you know, I do say this word on the podcast, suck. It's going to have all sorts of suck in it all the time. And it'll probably suck more than other things. And the question a little bit at times is, do you when something is hard, do you stop or do you do it because it's hard and good? And we certainly live in a time where that issue has not even been talked about. Women have not been encouraged in this. So I don't want to have anyone walking away from this just feeling condemned by this or anything. But I do think that it goes back to where that little conversation started, which is just having a goal as a parent, a goal for the child. Now, I'm not talking about like you plan their life. He's going to be an NBA basketball player and then blah, blah, blah. No, that's not what I mean. But there's got to be a direction or an aim. And then what is that? Now, for you and I, that is Christians who are good citizens. I think that's kind of what would summarize it well. And obviously, not obviously, we mean Lutherans when we say Christian.
Right.
But I don't want to make people think that it's about Germanic culture or something silly like that. I want a Christian who confesses the Augsburg Confession and believes the Small Catechism to be true, who thereby and will be as a result a good citizen capable of engaging the modern world, which is a very changing and radical place. Do you agree with that? I mean, that's my goal.
I think to take it a step further, I think that's my number one. But then what bleeds out of that, and I've recently been convicted by several things I've listened to, actually an interview you and Pastor Kuntz did on Sharper Iron solidified this, but it's to make citizens, it's to make Christians number one, citizens number two, but as citizens, mothers and fathers, that being the goal, because society doesn't continue without mothers and fathers.
It is interesting that the words mothers and fathers is not assumed in citizen.
No, it's not.
It used to be. It used to be, and it should be. Now, if you are single or if you are in a situation where you cannot have children, this is not meant in any way to condemn you or tell you that you're wrong or evil. If you're single, the Lord blesses some people with singleness and the faith to endure it, which means it's hard. And if you are barren, that is a result of the fall and our sinful condition. And the Lord blesses you with faith to endure it because it's hard. But the normal order of things is mothers and fathers. And so good citizens are good mothers and fathers. Because you can be a bad mother or father too. I mean, that's there too. And that's part of being a bad citizen, is that you don't raise your kids. I honestly, and I'll just get real honest, I am terrified for what happens in 30 years in this country. When I look at the state of parenting, I am terrified about what the group of monsters we are building is going to do. And it's because I have to rely on them to deal with my healthcare probably. So I'm just selfish at the end of the day. But it's we're building bad citizens by not being intentional parents. And it begins with goals. Even if you disagree with me about what a good citizen would be, we don't even have that as a goal. We just hand them over to the government and let the government decide what to do. It's not worked well. So I don't know if you want to follow that one or not.
Well, there is that side of me that gets really scared, but then there's the other side of me that's watching trends, and I'm noticing people are having more kids. It's maybe not loud and in your face. It's not in all of the pop songs and on all the TV shows, but it's more common to have three kids, at least I'm noticing. It's more common for people to desire organic foods and to desire organic clothes for their kids. You know, I don't know if that's just an in vogue thing, but it would seem to me that the natural organic life, organic family is becoming more in vogue. It could be a passing trend that goes away with yoga, but it would seem that there is still that desire. So I'm holding out hope, I guess.
It is natural law. It's built into us. So there is that. The system, so far as I understand, our socioeconomic zeitgeist, the spirit of the age and the powers of the age, is dead set against letting that happen. But we'll see. I wonder if I saw some recent demographic data. I don't remember where. It was very brief, but I'm pretty sure that it revealed that the U.S., although it has dipped below replacement levels in recent years, like last couple of years, has come back up slightly. So it didn't entirely dip down under 2. I think it went down to 2.1. It's supposed to be at 2.3. And it jumped up a little bit. But first, it didn't among what you might call educated people. Mm-hmm. So you might think white population, but the problem is that when people climb out of or into what used to be only the white population, which was the intellectual elite, they're climbing into this issue too, right? They're climbing into not having kids. And so all of those numbers are skewed by immigration, not that the immigrants balance it, but the immigrants having kids mm-hmm. balance it. And the problem is not that immigrants are having kids, is that we keep converting them to our culture within a generation and a half then they stop having kids too. And so the problem, while is only on a slow decline here because of immigration and is in a fast decline in places like Russia, Germany, and so forth, it still is here. And the problem with the demographic decline is it becomes a vortex spiral. It's the kind of dive you can't pull out of, like tangibly. It's impossible to do so at the scale we would need to retain what we know of as civilization, 100 years from now. And that probably has already begun so far as any Western world, birth control world exists. Africa, different story. China, they have both problems. Because they did the one child thing, which really hit them hard, and they're gonna take a long time to recover. But they have such a large base to begin with, and then, one way or the other. I mean, those are the centers of power in the next 100 years, simply on a matter of demographics, and there will be no standard against it, because demographics is history. It really is. So anyhow, I'm glad you've seen some.
Well, yeah, some kids. Walking around, I'm not always the one who has the most kids anymore.
That's
kind of
cool.
Kind of neat. Yeah.
I got two ideas we could push back into here. Three, I guess. I don't know which one to pick. I'm going to go back to the one way back there. I said I had two and never got to this one. So you had talked about basically boundaries. We didn't really say the word boundaries, but setting boundaries with your children, which is when you say something that is a command or a statement or an intention or a limit,
mm-hmm.
that it is now beholden upon you to maintain that limit. And you said, if you don't, then you're a liar. And that's really insightful, I think, although it's kind of an intuitive leap. It's a big jump. So if you say something that is then later changed, someone might say, well, you didn't mean to lie, and so it's not a lie. Well, but the kid doesn't know that. That's the problem there, right?
It's establishing a relationship of distrust.
Right. And that was the word you then went to, was they will no longer trust you to be a truth teller, right, whether or not you intended to lie. Now, when you were saying that, I had the idea, you said there would be no trust. And I thought you were going to say in my own head, there would be no consequences. So what I'm curious about, excuse me, is the connection between consequences and trust. Because I think most people think of punishment either as like, you deserve it, you get it, I'm angry, or some sort of motivational tool. But if we take the word punishment away and we put in the word consequences and then tie that to what trust is, I just feel like there's something in there. Do you have any thoughts on that? I mean, I'm just throwing this in the air and looking for something.
Well, first off, I'm feeling like I should establish a base ground here, baseline of imperfect me. I am not perfect, and I do not.
What? I live with you. You're lying. That's not true. You're so amazing.
I have not implemented what I would see as all of this perfectly in our family and with our kids, constantly relying on grace and forgiveness for what I've done. The best is when I'm livid with a child and I'm in their face and I'm speaking firmly, not firmly, sternly, and then I spit on them or something. You know, that's the greatest.
Not like a, but
no,
like it just comes
but
out,
like
right?
The spit comes out of my mouth just because it's on the word and sticks in their face. Well, instantaneous meltdown, we all start laughing. The moment passes and it's hard to regain the mood, which is a grace in many ways. But consequences. So essentially what you want to establish is, child, my words are real. What I speak is real. And it's not because I don't want you to enjoy life. It's because I want you to live life. I don't want you to die. So you need to be able to trust my every word. So if I say, don't move your right arm, you won't move it. And then I can tell you, once you've done that and the moment has passed, if you had moved your right arm, you would have gotten bit by a black widow spider. You know, but at that time, I could not tell you, and you needed to listen to me. You need to be able to establish that so that they will be safe. And so I guess in our boundaries and in our consequences with them, it's ultimately so that you say, stop backing up, and they stop so that they don't fall down the stairs. You know, it's a constant protection of them. I don't know that I answered the question, but that's what you're
super fast aside. You know, you said, don't move your right arm. And of course you're thinking of something reasonable, like a black widow spider. And I'm like, because the Gom Japar has entered your skin. Yeah. And if you don't know Dune or Goodnight Dune, a wonderful children's book, you do need to check those things out. So the goal of making sure that the child does not die, I think it's a goal most people do have.
I think so.
But they don't necessarily connect that with language, words, trust, boundaries, behavior.
And I think, unfortunately, we learn that, wow, my goal as a parent is to keep this child alive through childhood. That thought does not become real until we have a close call. Unfortunately, until you're 3-year-old climbs out of the crib and lands in a way that gives them a bruise on their face, and you think, holy cow, praise the Lord, they didn't crack their head open or kink their neck in a way that broke it. You know, right. I could have lost my child.
Right.
And so it's those moments of kind of brutal reality that wake us up as parents and gives us another view of what we are supposed to actually be doing. But I don't think, again, I answered your question.
Well, I just want to connect that again to words and boundaries and behavior. So when you're talking to the 2-year-old about the spoon, like, someone might say, well, that's not a life or death issue. But the thing is, it kind of is. Maybe not today.
Well, at that moment, you know, she didn't want the Cheerios and milk that were on the spoon. Okay, great. But what about the time when I have to give her Benadryl because she's having hives and she doesn't realize it, and she could become really, really sick really fast if I can't get that Benadryl into her mouth?
I'm even thinking further down the line than that when it comes to adulthood and your ability to take care of yourself and not have to be having someone provide for you, right? Like in a childlike way. When it comes to making your own decisions, when it comes to engaging with other humans. I mean, there are times when I look at and I'm thinking of young boys that I have maybe seen in coaching situations or whatnot. And it isn't just that the kid doesn't pay attention or misbehaves. The kid is such a poor communicator that is never really challenged or taught otherwise, that at some point it's going to get beat up.
I see what you're saying.
He's going to get beat up. Mm-hmm. Or maybe I should say differently. It's not that he's a poor communicator. The kid is maybe even a bully. but he shouldn't be because he's going to get beat up when he's actually in a big pool. Mm-hmm. Right. And so I think, and that's, that may be an extreme in situation, but I really do believe that behavior and staying alive as good citizens all kind of roll together as one big thing. So we think, oh, I got to feed them, I got to clean them, but we don't. And we've been missing this. I must teach them to talk. I must teach them to think.
Oh yeah. You never know. I recently am moving into a community that isn't all safe in every area. You know, you don't realize until you're in a situation where you're like,
hold on, I just gotta say 815, 815, that's all that matters. you know what's up, 815. Continue.
Until you're in a situation where your behavior outside of your home actually could get you hurt.
Yeah.
You don't think about that. And so we're walking into a store or something and your child says, "Mother, look at that." And you're just going, "Oh my goodness, don't say that." So learning what is it? Ethical behavior or considerate behavior that the only way that starts and is implemented is by them, like I said before, getting the vocabulary and the body language and having you as a parent speak to you. Now, will they get that or speak to them? Will they get that without the parent speaking to them? Yes, but who's going to teach them? The television, the songs they listen to, you know, they're going to get it from whatever words go into their ears. So if you want them to have a worldview or an ethical way of acting that's louder than what the culture is telling them, then you have to be more present in their ears than the culture and the world around them.
I think that's super important too, because I think that a lot of parents in the modern age don't do what we're suggesting you try to do and admitting that we're not perfect at doing. And then the kid's like 15 and starts saying and thinking and acting in certain ways. And you say, you know, where did this come from? Right? How did this happen? And sure, a sinner unattended will do stupid things. It just happens. But also, they've been trained for 15 years to behave and act and talk a certain way. And you know, if you don't know it, the portrayal of parents on TV and in movies is of dumb people who you should not listen to. So if that's all your kid's ever seen is dumb people who you should not listen to, and that's who they associate with you, well, then eventually they're going to put all it together and be like, oh, that guy's an idiot. I'm not going to listen anymore. And you're like, why don't you listen to me? And I mean, the answer is because you never talked to him before.
A more subtle example of that is my kids are always so surprised when I say at the library, we don't read Bernstein Bear books. And we put them back. And they look at me and they say, why? And you, listener, are probably like, why on earth would you not let your kids read Bernstein Bear books? And it's really simple. Papa Bear is portrayed as a fool. And I never wanted my kids to grow up thinking that the head of the household was Mama Bear. I just didn't. And so very early on, I was like, oop, nope. Not going to do that. We also don't read Curious George because Curious George is really cute and funny. And why wouldn't you let them read it? Because he's always getting into trouble. And I learned how quickly what you put in front of a child influences them when I read my oldest daughter a book called Olivia about a little pig. And Olivia in that book colors on the wall. And the next day, my daughter drew on her bedroom wall. Like that was never even an option in her mind until I read that book and I thought, oh, this is serious.
Yeah. And you think, well, adults wouldn't do that. Well, you'd be surprised. The power of suggestion and influence is huge. You have been listening a little bit to that book, Influence, that I listened to. Yeah. I can try to put a link in the show notes. It'll change the way you think about TV, media, politics, and how you at least train your mind to not let it tell you what to do. As it's all secular. There's no Christian stuff in it. the power of influence we are susceptible to as adults, and then a child who basically is a living mirror is going to be doubly so, right? They are all like, I see, I try, I see, I try, I see, I try, I hear, I try.
And that goes back to the boundaries. Really, if I push it this far, is the consequence going to be what my parent told me it was going to be? Is that real? And that's healthy. It's healthy for them to push against the boundary. But you have to show them, yeah, it's real.
I don't remember where I learned that it's also a tremendous source of security for them emotionally to know that there is the boundary. It's sort of like if you step toward a step that is not where you thought it was, and so you fall through it, and then you're really glad when it's only 2 inches away and not like, what, you know, off a roof, because you've hit a foundation again. And so emotionally, the kid wants to know that that boundary is real for the emotional stability of trusting the parent, honestly.
Right.
And if they find out that it's not real, we're leaving here the moment you do this, and then you don't leave, they've got to find where the step is so they don't fall off the roof, right?
I can't trust you now, mother.
So they have to keep doing the thing you said not to do to find out what will make it stop. And this is, again, about regaining some place of trust within the relationship. I've never connected it to trust before. That's really, really insightful, again, on your part.
Thank you.
No, it's great. But the security that it brings to the child, even though they are unhappy.
Right.
And then so maybe the happiness, the need of the child to be happy at all costs at all times is one of the most flawed, and I don't even understand how you could think it's possible ideas ever. But I know that I had the emotion. I can understand the temptation to want the child to stop crying.
Mm-hmm. Well, and this doesn't necessarily speak to the specific word of happiness, but something around the dinner table, around the table, just in general, that the kids will hear me say is, you don't have to like it, but you have to eat it. So you don't have to be happy about it, but you do need to follow the directions. I don't care if you don't enjoy doing your math, but your responsibility right now is to do your math. So you're going to do it. I don't like making supper. Now, that's not because I don't like cooking, but it falls at a really, really hard time of day. I'm tired. And for whatever reason, the weather is always the most beautiful when it's time to be in the kitchen cooking supper. And so I really just want to be outside, walking around or whatever, weeding, enjoying the outdoors. But I have a responsibility to make supper for my family every night. And so, like it or not, I have to do it. And God tells us that it's a good work to do it, to just serve your neighbor.
Now, while there might be someone out there screaming at me, the bigot who doesn't help cook, we'll leave that for another time. What I think is really interesting about that is something you and I talked about, I think like just two nights ago. And I kind of asked the question, you know, how do you teach grit?
Oh, yeah.
How do you teach grit? You know, grit being the idea of you can get through it. And the fact is, if every time the kid doesn't like food, you give him something else, you are unteaching grit. Mm-hmm. And what you are doing, even though we would like to teach more grit somehow in our personal life, that approach is a belief in the value of grit as a skill set that transcends your diet significantly.
Oh, yeah.
Right? It transcends your diet. Now, sports can teach you grit. Yes. But they don't teach everybody grit.
But think about, as you train in sports, how do you – every time that you have to go to practice, what motivates you to go? Well, the praise that your coach gave you the last practice when you did the right thing, or the personal best, personal record that you broke the last time you were at practice, or – at a meet or in a game, the way that the adrenaline rush felt after winning that last game with your team. It's the positive that you get from the hard work that motivates you to keep going. And so I believe that for somebody to increase their grit, they really need to be able to dwell on the positive feeling of success or just accomplishment. So my child stuck with it and washed all the dishes. And now every time I pull those dishes out to use them for meals or food prep, wow, so-and-so, look at how clean this spoon is. You did such a great job. Thank you so much for washing these plates. Now we have a great, beautiful table setting for our dinner. Isn't it wonderful that we have clean cups to drink our water out of? You know, the praise, the positive goes a long way.
Yeah, I don't want to call the episode this, although it's a great title, The Power of Praise, because it kind of does sound like a revivalist hootenanny, but there's something to it. And I will say that this is somewhere I have a lot of room for improvement.
I do too.
It is not natural to praise your children, I don't think. It is natural to criticize them. And this is a whole nother conversation. I don't think we should necessarily follow it, but the internal conversation you have with yourself the rest of your life is the conversation your parents had with you when you were 1 to 5 years old. And none of us are perfect at that. We certainly are past our window here on this one. But it is a true thing. And so the self-criticism that not everybody has, honestly. But if you do, I mean, it comes from lack of words of praise, trusted words of praise applied to real life in that childhood. And now you're kind of seeking it as you criticize yourself now. Now, whether or not you can walk through those own kind of scars in your own head to just acknowledge that for the child, you said this earlier, the only thing they want is your approval.
Oh, yeah.
The only thing in life they really want. I mean, they're going to – every flashy, shiny thing, they want it for a second. But that none of that – they don't really build their life on that.
It's not fulfilling. And that, I think, as creatures is what we're looking for, is something to be fulfilling. I just lost my train of thought. So if you have something
– Just to go back to again, okay. the praise –
Oh, yes.
Is something to – now, we began the conversation with pit stops and restarts, right? To always be looking for a place to do a little better and simply to go to the child and say – and maybe you always tell them you love them. That's great. But take that to a different level. Take it to a place where it's not just, you know, bye, I love you, but is this thing I saw you do – I had thoughts about how much I love you during that moment. But I normally just let those go and just stare at you and love you, right?
Right.
But I want to tell you about it right now.
And you had mentioned how we're past our window in our family because our youngest is 5. And from 1 to 5, that dialogue that you have
formation time.
Really formulates yeah. what their internal voice is going to be. But at the same time, I do believe the grace is that even if we've messed up, those 1 to 5 years and that dialogue, we can start anew and give them tools to rework or reset that inner dialogue. We can undo our mistakes by giving them ways to work through that negativity that might be there.
Yeah, forgiveness is at the heart of it every day. And the human brain is soft tissue. It is not a closed system. It can constantly be molded and changed.
Right.
It's just, it does it more and faster from 1 to 5. Mm-hmm. It's easier to do it from 1 to 5. That's the time to put your effort in. And we did in a lot of ways, right? And now we're at a certain age where we're like, this part about praise, I mean, no one told us this, right? So we didn't know that till later. So maybe you do, and you can now, right? If you're a listener, we'll apply it today. Again, under that cover of the forgiveness of sins, which we have taught intentionally mm-hmm. from the start, kind of believing that that's the foundation of our marriage and therefore the foundation of a good family, of course, because of the foundation of the church in Christ.
And again, with the forgiveness with children, they're not going to automatically ask for forgiveness. There is shame and they want to run from what they've done. So oftentimes they will lie about whether or not they did something, but we have to give them the words of forgiveness. And the way we do that is not say you're sorry, apologize for what you've done. That's not what's going to really give them the vocabulary. The vocabulary comes when, well, let's say I'm frustrated and I'm standing in their face and I'm speaking sternly and I spit on them. And I ask for forgiveness.
Just so we don't have child services call us, right?
Oh, and my tongue flicks spittle into their eye, you know, here's another thing. Like if I back up into one of them because I'm in the kitchen working really in a kind of a crazy mode of not paying attention to what's around me but focusing on the food – and I back up and I step on one of their feet, turning around immediately and saying, I am so sorry. Please forgive me. Are you okay? That gives them the vocabulary to then, when they slam the door on a sibling's finger, to stop and say, I am so sorry. Are you okay? It's been modeled. And what I'm trying to get at is modeling goes a lot further than just saying, do this.
Right.
Do that.
Right. Right. They will do what you do more than what you say. They can learn to do what you say, but they're more likely to do it if you also do it.
And unfortunately, that's such a cliche little thing. I mean,
it's huge, though. It's absolutely huge. They will be who you are, and they'll see it better than yourself. You'll see. I know we've got a couple of good stories we could probably tell about that. What's the one, and maybe it's there's something that you say sometimes and it's sort of a chiding thing, and then it sort of came out at dinner one time, someone else was saying it. It was all funny. I can't remember. They'll pick up on these phrases that like only you say. Like I don't say them, no one else says them, the world doesn't say them, only you say them, but suddenly they're using it like it's normal conversation, right? And you know, yeah, the modeling goes a long way. They that's what TV is doing for them again, is modeling for them. Mm-hmm. And you just got to know that. I'm not saying no TV ever. I'm saying know that it's modeling. And if you're not balancing that intentionally in some way, send them off to public school. It's modeling. Send them off to Christian school. It's modeling. Mm-hmm. One or the other, they're learning how to behave. And the task is given by God to you to teach them this. So yeah, sure, use other tools, fine. But you should know what's going on and then also be involved in it yourself to some extent. Again, I made the joke about family services, but I do actually want to. I this world is so crazy today, Meredith. So when my wife said, and then she spits on the kids, she's talking about how she's so exacerbated that she actually is saying something, and a little bit of spittle flies up in the air from her lips and then falls down upon the child because, and you know, as a preacher, I've had this happen in the pulpit where I watch a big one kind of go flying. Like, oh, I hope no one saw that. I got to keep talking. And so it happens when anybody's talking. Various times, get excited. We're not talking about actually spitting on the kids.
No.
And frankly, that caveat may not be enough in 30 years if someone wants to destroy us and go take that clip of you and then put it on YouTube and then do some – it's just crazy how evil people are. But at least we have the us caveat in it at the back. It's crazy. It's crazy. What a world. So that reminds me. There's a story today in the news. Remember the kids who – got completely doxxed for wearing a Trump hat at the rally, and then the Native American man who was not a vet but said he was a vet was like banging a drum in their face and he smiled, and then the world hated the kid for smiling. I don't know a lot about those kids. Covington Catholic School group. One of them just today or yesterday had his formally accepted application to Harvard rescinded because somehow it came to light that a year ago, 2 years ago, in an online forum somewhere, like your Facebook secret group maybe or something like that, he had used a word that I would agree is not just a cuss word, but a loaded racial term. Apparently, in a off-color joke, which there are comedians who do that. They're usually of that race when they do that, but they do it. So for all I know, I've never seen it. Maybe he was just quoting Kevin Hart, right? I don't know. But it was for that thing coming to light somehow, someone digging, that then Harvard rescinded his application. Again, so it's like, it's just so crazy what people will do to harm you if you're on the wrong side of a certain agenda.
Oh, grace have mercy.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
As you're talking about this, I'm thinking, you know, we've been talking about boundaries, we've been talking about consequences, and I think about how hard it is to be disciplined by the Lord, and yet what a blessing it is. And in some ways, that's discipline to him, pulling sure. him back to a point where God will increase his faith. If he is a Catholic, Christ have mercy.
The crazy thing, honestly, is that Harvard just gave him a nationwide platform if he wants to use it again. Oh. I mean, he has a platform to bypassing a Harvard degree and just going on his own and being famous if he wants. He's got it now, right? And yeah, will there be some people who hate him? Yes, but that's kind of the price you pay a little bit. Mm-hmm. Anyhow, that's all politics. But it does, I mean, how would our son act in an event where somebody is banging a drum in his face?
Oh, well, right? Our son
right
would
now
probably smile at them. I mean, he'd probably be in the same boat as that guy because he would smile because he'd be, that is his response to somebody picking on him. Yeah. Generally speaking.
Right, right. Rather than respond with rage.
He wouldn't punch them in the nose.
You just try to, yeah, yeah.
He would think it was funny because he thinks surely everything in life
is
funny.
Him. Yeah, that is just him. I think the other guy was more just gritting it out. I don't think he really, maybe. He talked about it too. It's like there was a point at which he thought it was just like all in good fun. Like, oh, you're showing me your culture and I'm enjoying it. Great. And then there was a point in which he realized, this is not you doing that. But I've already got this smile on my face. I just kind of got to hold it here now. And I really want you to stop, but I don't want to hurt you, right? I'm just trying to, okay, we're cool.
I don't get this whole story. I mean, I never did from the start. And so I hate to speak to it.
He had a Trump hat on. So they hate him.
But his response is completely peaceful.
Yeah. Yeah.
In the sight of
but
a persecutor,
white.
And it just doesn't make any yeah. sense to
he's
me.
White and male. It doesn't matter. I mean, you're right. You have not been conscripted by the gender studies movement that believes that to be white and male is in fact evil.
I have heard that that is the thought process these days. Yes,
it's getting there.
I'm not pleased by it. And honestly, you know, you were talking about motherhood and what a challenging task it is. And I think I almost cringe when I hear that. I do not enjoy Mother's Day because I don't want people to show me love because somebody else tells them to. I want them to show me love because they want to show me love. I don't want to have to say, well, look at me. I've done so much work. Now you should have a holiday in my honor. I think that's silly.
Well, it's
and
not
it's
really
embarrassing
where,
to
it is
me.
Not where it came from. To be fair, its roots are a little better than that.
But that's how I take it personally. And I try not to. Well, now that I've shared that, I've shared it with a lot of people, so it's not a very private thought anymore. But it's one of those things that I struggle personally with Mother's Day. And I feel really bad that I forget Father's Day.
But I have the same feeling, so it really doesn't matter to me. So whatever. And it's like, if you buy me a gift, I paid for it. So, I mean,
I know there is that. I wanted to buy you a candle from Target that,
well, I haven't
that
used the
Joanna
last one you gave me.
and Chip Gaines put out. It's like got this really amazing leathery, I think it's cedar and leather or something. It was very masculine. And I thought of you and I thought, when could I buy this for him? And then I didn't because, yeah, it was like, I'm using his money to buy his own gift. And I feel like it's more of a gift to just leave his money in the bank account and let him use it for what he wants.
This is true. This is actually true. Although I like the candle that you're talking about. It sounds nice, yeah. But I probably would not have bought it. And since we're both on the minimalism kick and wanting to downgrade kick and wanting to be wise with our long-term financial planning kick, like I am attempting, at least on my part, not to buy stuff that's just stuff unless it is intentional, long-term usable, serves a purpose, right now. And while a candle for some might be that, it's not for me. Right?
Yeah. And it's been interesting because as we've gone through this little journey of minimalism, I've realized that candles and smelly things really are something that I love.
Yeah.
And it makes my home somewhere that I just really want to be. And the smell of it it increases the emotional experience of being home.
I love it when you light candles in the house. I just don't ever do it.
Right.
So if it's in my room, it won't be lit. Yeah, that's exactly it. It will not be lit. My room. My room would be the studio office in the den. Okay. That was good.
That was a big tangent.
And there were actually two or three, I think, in there as we went in that direction. But it came back to, or started with at one point, you know, what are your goals? That's the first question you have to answer as a parent. And then once you do that, you have to realize that your words and your integrity with those words is the biggest tool that you have. The trust that is engendered in the child by the use of those words and the equipping with those words to have conversations with you is then what will lead to them looking to you for guidance further down the road, as opposed to dismissing you in favor of, say, a box that talks to them, you know, by the time they're five or six, which is not just quite possible, I would say regular.
Mm. I think the beautiful part of God's design in all of this is that the infant doesn't come out distrusting you. Mm. You don't have to earn their trust. They have ultimate trust in you when they're born.
Right.
And they will continue to trust you all the way. I mean, you have to do some pretty awful things for them to not love you and want to trust you until they're about 10. And then once they're about 10, it starts to become a little rocky with the introduction of hormones for some reason. I don't know what that's all about, but that's when the natural desire to trust and follow and want to please the parent starts to.
I think it gets impacted. I don't think it goes away.
No, it doesn't go away.
It just gets impacted in how you perceive it. And it's still underneath the entire thing. But they're very much at that, I am moving toward real independence now phase of psychological development. Which is beautiful and totally a good thing. And you want to work toward it and work for it. But it does hamper your as a parent's awareness of their trust of you and their desire to please you. But that does come back. The question a little bit is, how long will it take to come back? And a lot of it has to do with what you do during that period to try to force them to come back. Because the more you try to force them to come back, the longer it will take them to do so, all the way up to, again, unhealthy behaviors that can drive someone away for a lifetime.
Sure.
But they do want to trust you even then.
Mm-hmm.
Right. Even a parent who is completely abused and lost the trust, and I'm talking like in the most diabolical ways, the child still wants to trust them.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
And it still hurts when those holidays that tell us that we're supposed to say, I love you to our mother or our father.
Right.
It hurts that child
to
go, oh, you know, I really want to send this I love you card, but I don't know how.
Yeah. And that's a whole nother story. We don't have to dig on that one too much, but it is the reason I brought it up is to emphasize for the parents who are listening that even when it doesn't look like that, the child does want to trust you.
Right.
And your task is to continue to be worthy of that trust as best you can, with the goal of using that trust to build them into Christians and good citizens.
Some valuable advice that I found in an article speaking to this was, when you have your preteen and teen coming to you, establishing right away, are you wanting to have advice, or are you wanting to just unload some of your own thoughts and emotions on me? Either one, I love to hear it and I'm here for you, but let me know how I can help serve you. Because sometimes as parents, we often jump into the, oh, you have a problem, well, let me fix it. And actually our teen, our preteen, they're just wanting somebody to dump on because they have all these experiences, all these emotions that are overwhelming them and they need to get them out. And so they might dump on you. So-and-so said this at school and she did that and he did this. And you're thinking, oh, well now I have to give you advice on how to fix it. And really they just need somewhere to express their frustration.
They're debriefing. And that's also a learned skill to be able to do that, to debrief and know that that's what you're doing.
But it's interesting because right after I read this article, I thought, oh, how am I supposed to figure this out? And I just, my child was at a developmental stage where I just said, do you want my advice or do you just want to dump on me? And she looked at me and said, I just want to dump on you. And it was like, okay, here we go. Like I didn't have to couch it in any special way because as a child, sometimes speaking to them in very straightforward manners is the best.
Always. That's just it. That's like the whole conversation has been, be as straightforward as you can with the child.
Mm-hmm.
Be as straightforward as you can. I'm going to ask you as my wife and the mother of my children to consider using the word debriefing rather than dumping.
Right.
Because dumping does sound not so good.
It does have baggage, doesn't it?
Yeah.
But debriefing, I just don't know if they knew in that moment if they would know the definition.
I agree with you. But now we're in a position where we can teach them the definition.
Give them more vocabulary.
Yes, exactly right. Exactly right. All right. We've gone 1 hour and 10, and so we're going to cut it. But I don't think we're done with this conversation. I think this will come back because I believe firmly that you have a lot of things people need to hear about parenting.
Oh, well, thank you.
And as much as I can talk the theory, and I can, you have walked the walk in ways I haven't. And you have insights like that consequences trust one that I just, you know, blows my mind. You also have tactics that I don't have. And so strategy, tactics, have we ever talked about the distinction? Yeah. So you have the tactics that I think many people will be looking for. And you've shared some in this conversation. So we will do this again and keep the conversation going on things like, you know, father, mother, daddy, mommy, things like TV and its place and whatever else we need to get into. But I want to thank you for your time. I know you are a person who questions your own value to others. And so you might say, you know, why would anyone want to hear what I have to say about this? And there's a certain quiet beauty in that, to be sure. Mm-hmm.
Thank you.
But there's also a lie in that as well.
You know, it's funny because I've thought about writing things down at the encouragement of people throughout the years. Oh, you should write a book. Oh, you should write a book. And I've thought, oh, well, I'll write a book. Okay, I'll write a book. And then I sit down to write a chapter or I'm thinking about writing a chapter. And then something in my life will happen where reality becomes heavy. And I go, I'm not worthy to write a book. Nobody would ever want to listen to what I have to say because I can't get through this perfectly. So,
well,
it's honey, funny how that happens though.
On you know, that, well, yeah, you're being attacked probably.
When you start thinking highly of yourself, something comes and brings you back down to your spot.
Are you wanting to debrief or are you wanting advice?
Oh, I like advice. But before we get to, I mean, are we going to go over with advice?
A tiny bit. Okay. Well, because I think this is important and it's not just for you, it's for others. You're never going to write a perfect book. You're never going to be worthy to write a book. You don't, not everything that you say will be worth hearing ever. But if you don't write what you can, then no one will be able to find the good things you do have. And the best books have more of that, right? And other books have some of that. But if you've got people asking you, what about this? What about this? What about this? Then you have enough good that's worth sharing, not because you're worthy to write a book, but because that idea will help the other people. Mm-hmm. And that's a reason to do it even when you suck, right? Right. you should do it anyway.
Well, yes, here is my mistake. Learn from my mistake. But thank you for having me. I really like being on this side of the table. I think you, I'm going to just offer a little story. When we were in Grand Cayman last year, we got this wonderful opportunity to go together on a honeymoon. Finally, it was our sweet 16. So why not, right?
And we didn't have a real honeymoon and we to begin with. So yeah. It was kind of nice. Yeah.
So we decided to go kayaking at night. And I had been kayaking once. I don't know. Had you been kayaking?
Yeah. As a kid. That camp. Sixth grade camp that everyone does.
Oh, yeah.
Ours
Wilderness
was on an island, Catalina Island, off the coast of San Diego.
So we had both gone individually, but I'd never done it with a partner. So I was in a kayak by myself.
Great. Yeah, thanks for this story. And hey, I should turn off your mic right now.
It goes. It's good. It's a good story. And so we're in position, and I think they had mentioned that the heavier person should be in one place and the lighter person should be in another. So immediately we positioned ourselves. So I was steering and you were the paddler.
Well, I think both people paddle.
Well, they do, but
definitely you were steering and I was in the place of weight.
And we found out quickly that it's better if you steer. So thanks for steering our kayak today.
Oh,
being the host. Goodness. I'm much more comfortable not being the host. I think I speak too slowly.
No, you don't. And I really enjoyed, other people really enjoyed that other conversation.
They're so gracious.
They are. Thank you for listening. But no, they're listening because they're interested. They're interested in whatever it is, for whatever bad reasons they have to be interested in me talking about Star Wars, right? They're interested. You were interested. And that's why I found that conversation stunning, was not because I had this or that to say in it, but because of what you wanted to know. And that fascinated me. And I think it fascinates others.
Yeah, it actually, I did learn quite a bit from that. It was fun.
So your interviewing is good.
Thank you.
And to the world, you know, if only 20 people listen to what you do, those 20 people are listening because they like what you do. So stop thinking you have to be famous to offer something
Christ
good
have mercy.
To offer something good to the world. You can offer something good to 15 people and it's good for them. And that is the pinnacle of vocation and citizenship. So I had a close. That was a nice close. Thank you. I had a close and now I've lost it. Oh, come back to me.
And
oh.
Just oh, never mind. No, I was gonna say, so while you were thinking about it, so for the listener, the Father's Day card that you received is Star Wars.
It is, even though if you listen to that episode, you know I really don't like Star Wars anymore. But it's pretty cool because it's like a steampunk style art. I would have preferred Luke to Vader because Luke is just cooler than Vader. Han's pretty cool too, but it's cool. It's cool. Thank you. But what didn't I tell you this? What did I say? No, maybe I didn't tell you this.
I don't know.
Don't tell the kids. I'd rather have the $5 in the bank than the card.
Yeah, we fail.
Because I have to
minimalism fail.
What I have to buy for the family today? There's something on Amazon we have to order, and it's gonna be $15. And that's a third of that. Anyway, it's just that. Thank you for the card. Thank you for thinking of me. Thank you for being on the show. Thank you for sharing what you have to share. You and I read a book together before we had our first child that I'm not gonna recommend because there are some real problems with the book. Maybe you remember it. Maybe you don't. It had to do with feeding patterns and timing.
Oh yeah. I actually highly recommend that book.
I do too, except for that it's a little bit of it's better legalistic. Or else, and it can really cause people to go overboard. And so it's just got some edges. But there was something in that book that it told the truth about, and it has happened, not just because of their sleeping patterns when they were young, but ever since. And it said, you will have people come up to you and ask. No. You will have people come up to you and say, aren't you lucky that you have a child that does that? And the book is again saying to you, you need to know right now that it has nothing to do with luck. It has everything to do with what you do to raise the child. Now, that has come to pass on more than one occasion in my life. I'm sure you get it more than I do, that people come up and say, aren't you lucky that your children are like this? And I have to say very loudly, I'm lucky that Jesus saved me and gave me the word of God and gave me the wisdom of Proverbs to be able to try to apply this kind of stuff in my life. So yes, but no. Our children are a direct result of what we've done, both good and ill. And we have yet to see them finish it out. So for all I know, it's all going to come crashing down. But at the same time, it sure doesn't look like that. They look pretty strong right now. And it has nothing to do with luck. It has to do with what they've been fed. You got to feed the kid both their body and their brain. And it does make a difference. But if you abandon it, if you give it up to somebody else, well, then...
you're at their mercy.
Then you're at their mercy. Whatever they did is what you're going to get. So I don't mean to... I hope that doesn't sound like boasting. It is intended to instead say that it isn't about us, actually, at all. It's about biblical wisdom and science applied to parenting carefully with goals and reason, and that it actually has an effect. No. You agree?
Oh, yeah. Amen. Was that worth a dollar? What about five? Click the Patreon link in the show notes to sign up. Pretty please?